pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three is now underway. 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text. We got a ton of texts to get to here. We will get to those in just a moment. Still to come on the program, Jared Hudson, candidate for United States Senate, will make his return to the program. We'll get caught up on what he thinks is going on and hear from him. Looking forward to that discussion. Let's see here from Adrian. Good morning, Joe. Didn't know if you had any new info on the CIA raiding Tulsi Gabbard's office last night. Her spokesperson, or man or woman or whatever it is, denies that there was a CIA raid. Then what was it? Ana Paulina Luna, the congresswoman from Florida. She put up a tweet and she deleted it. We looked into it. I don't know if the CIA, because the CIA can't conduct domestic law enforcement operations. They don't have that authority, but maybe because it's within government, I don't know. It seems like the turf for the FBI. But, Adrian, I've seen the reporting and I've seen the reports, and I can't make heads or tails of it if it's real or not. But Gabbard's office denies that the raid took place. Maybe there's some updated information, but when that drops, it's like, man, that is weird. That's weird to hear that because, you know, can you ever think of a time when the CIA actually performed one of these? I mean, it just, you don't hear about this. They're a spy agency. If it's true, it's troubling. If it's not, I mean, you know how these things go. Sorry, but obstreperous, hopefully I'm pronouncing that, it's the perfect word to fit this type of behavior. I think precise language juxtaposes nicely with whatever Gavan was doing with language. I tell my writers just use words that people know what they mean. I have one reporter who likes to use big words. I'm always having to fix them. When you're in mass communications, you want to get the most bang for your buck. So you don't write with complicated terms, technical jargon. You're writing for a mass audience. Yes, do you dumb it down a little bit? But you can communicate in ways without using words I need to go get a dictionary to know how to pronounce. Tim, I'd like to know who's really calling the shots. I would too. I don't know what's going on within the Ivy, within the governor's suite. I imagine she calls the shots on the big things. But this is how executive branch of government works. You have a chief executive, but the chief executive does delegate a lot of things to underlings. And some of those shots are, you know, it's perfectly reasonable to think the finance director's calling shots on some things, or the chief of staff on others, or the legislative liaison. But you're right. There's reason to believe that it's not, in some cases, totally Governor Ivey. Matt, good morning, Jeff. I totally agree it's a culture versus education issue, but a question to that. Why is there a poll statistic of educated whites versus not educated whites when folks poll? How the hell is that not discriminatory? Serious question, Matt. They want to know, and when they poll it, is it discriminatory, or how do they need to craft a message? Are there cultural barriers keeping the message from getting across to win elections? It's more of a strategic necessity than it is just we're compiling these racial demographics or these education demographics for whatever reason. There's utility in it. What should our message be to voters? We want to come and vote for us. Do we want to use big words? You know? What resonates? And you use this data in ways, it's part of political communication 101. Messaging is so important. People make up their mind. And, you know, look at politics. And I talk about the policy, but in politics, I mean, policy, it's the, you know, you can whittle it down to the good of the collective versus the freedom of the individual. But politics is more of psychology, more trying to understand the way voters think. What gets them motivated? What influences their decisions the most? And understanding the cultural aspects of it, understanding what resonates with people. Some politicians just have a knack for it. They understand people. They are good at people. They are people. And then some just, you know, they're in their bubble. They're in their cocoon. I'm telling you, the difference, Tommy Tuberville on a policy basis is very good. But he's, you know, he's sort of an out-of-the-box right-wing Republican, fine. And that does well. But where he really succeeds, way more than, you know, anyone else, maybe he doesn't realize this. At least he didn't initially. He takes this the cultural aspect where people understand a locker room talk. We grew up with sports. We grew up with Auburn versus Alabama and football. He takes that locker room talk, the pep talk, and he puts politics in with it. And there's a psychological response that you wouldn't believe is off the charts. Now, you don't really see it as much in his radio interviews, but you see it when you go to his events. And I really picked up on this early on with him, and I knew he was gonna win from that point forward. I'll always remember this. It was Tennessee Valley Republican Club. I had been on the air in Huntsville for a few months. The 2020 cycle was getting underway. And it was the election to contest the seat that Doug Jones was holding. So it was a seat that somebody on the Republican side was probably going to win. And we had started out very early on with Bradley Byrne. Then later came Tommy Tuberville. Much later, Jeff Sessions. And Tommy Tuberville, not having really done this, not, you know, so you didn't know what to expect, but he gave the locker room talk. And I have been to hundreds of political stump speeches. And you could read the room, and I'm less interested in what the candidate is saying. I'm more interested in the audience's reaction. And some candidates, when they speak, people's mind wanders. They're playing on their phone. They're nodding off. They're, you know, their eyes are wandering around the room. They're talking to each other. When it was Tommy Tuberville, it was different. It was all eyeballs locked on him. And he delivered the speech. Now, he would be on sometimes, and sometimes he would not do well. He would try to do too many events in that 2020 cycle. When he said 6-7 a day, he was not lying. And by event 5, 6, and 7, he didn't have his fastball anymore. But when he was on, you knew, like, this is going to be the guy. That he is hitting these voters in a way that other guys just haven't been able to. And he took the voodoo of like a locker room talk and mixed it with the red meat politics of the time, which was still Donald Trump. And it was very effective. Let's see what we got here. Morning, Jeff. This is from Matt. I totally agree. It's culture versus education. You know, see, what is, so, da, 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 da. Thank you for answering. Fair point. I see the mainstream media, specifically CBS and CNN, use a statistic in so many elections, and they shape it how like a dumbass vote versus educated. In other words, it seems like it's being used as a discriminatory tactic. Could you imagine if that scalp was flipped and other showing non-educated blacks versus educated blacks? Sure. And then that's what they like to do. They like to say, well, non-educated whites go to Trump, so Trump must be bad. But this is where they're trying to win the debate trophy and not win the election. As long as we're in America, non-educated white voters, their vote counts as much as the educated white voters. That's the system we have. There's a lot of people who reject the elitism. They reject the elitism, and the media haven't figured that out. And I think they're just okay with being this elitist institution that write and talk for each other. And they think they get the debate trophy, but they're going to lose it to the ballot box. They'll have some victories, but the country is in this populist moment because it feels like the elitists are taking advantage of the people, that the system is rigged for corporate interest, for the wealthy, for the protected classes. And they may win on a CNN panel, the argument. But they're not winning the election. Do you want to be a reigning champion on Newsnight on CNN? Or do you want to get elected to higher office? And that's where they're missing the point, Matt. DEI texture. It's a lie that gambling is a poor tax. I disagree, but I think the statistics back that up. Unnamed texter, I understand about illegal gambling, sports betting being illegal. My son got caught up, and it was scary. Yeah, when you make it legal, you have profound societal changes. We never talk about that. All we talk about is, raise more money for the government, and if that's going on, then that's a great thing. I mean, some of us think the government has enough money. It's not about the freedom to bet. You could do that. You just can't do that in Alabama legally. But if you want to go sports gamble, you could drive an hour to Mississippi. You could sports bet in Mississippi. Fine. Go for it. No one's telling you can't gamble. Well, I think the distinction here is, do you want the state seal of approval on that? Unnamed texter, thank you for asking Chris Elliott pointed questions about gambling. He asked what I wanted to know. You were a good interviewer. His explanation of why American Conservative Fund would spend money on him, even though his last vote was against gambling, was interesting. Michael, I really think people are underestimating support for Jared Hudson has in South Alabama. I know Barry was technically our representative, but nobody in Mobile or Baldwin County really saw him as ours. If y'all polled y'all's audience, I bet Hudson would be above 35%. He's the only one that articulated the America First agenda and against the neocons nation building. We get sucked into the Middle East. One more real quick here. Hey, Jeff, this is Billy D. Hey, what did you think about that Chinese mayor of Los Angeles getting arrested in Los Angeles, California? Getting arrested. She was a spy worker for the CCP. It was Arcadia, which is sort of outside L.A., but one day L.A. mayor. Kind of strange times we live in, isn't it? We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Mr. T.
Sitting here at the Floribama, about to open up a big old can. Good times, unwind, falling and out of love in the same night. Can't say I got a whole lot of cares. I'm in the redneck Riviera. It's getting crazy.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. Programming note tomorrow on the show, Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News, Scott Stadhagen, our Alabama Republican Party chairman, and makeup appearance. I know some of you are big April Marie Fogle fans, and I got to say, I swapped her and our returning champion, Senator Elliott's times to accommodate Senator Elliott's conflict. So you'll hear from her probably, I suspect, a couple late additions there as we are approaching Tuesday. But it may be a crowded show from here till Tuesday. And then even beyond, given we'll have qualifying for congressional elections that comes up right immediately after that. Pat Yaffe just reported Barry Moore is filing a bill that requires immigrants to disavow Sharia law and Islam if they want to stay here. Does he not understand the freedom of religion? Is Sharia law a religion, or is it I don't know if it's a religious question. It may be a speech question, because you can believe whatever you think you want. And if you think that Sharia law is the best form of our best system of governance for the United States, then you ought to be able to think that. I think you're absolutely wrong, but no, I don't. Now, look, it's different for immigrants. They're coming here. They have to cede some of their rights that natural born citizens don't. You're coming here to the United States. I mean, you have to, there's a loyalty oath involved. So it's not absolute. You're coming here conditionally. So I don't know what the legal ramifications are, but I don't think he is saying that you must disavow Islam as a religion, but Sharia law is much different in that context, Pat. But, let's just say that I suspect it wouldn't stand the test of judicial muster, especially with all the liberal judges we have in America. Squirrel Vereen, dedicated Daily Democrat listeners must be at jobs with coworkers playing your station and they can't do anything about it but fuss at you. Well, I appreciate them listening. I get annoyed with them, especially when they go ad hominem. But I think over time, maybe they come around. And then Squirrel Vereen, as we know from Cicero, the CIA can operate inside with a domestic agency attached. Toothless Bammer, market at all-time high, Jeff. Wall Street's coupled with the Straits blockage. The underlying metrics of the economy are fine. This isn't a very popular take, but I'm going to tell you, oil and gas is benefiting from this. Not in the sense that, hey, we're going to run up your prices and make you pay more. It's not that at all. I mean, maybe to a small extent. But really what it is, domestic production is benefiting from the lack of production abroad. More American oil is going to market, and there's a premium on it because it's easily accessible. Sicario, not Cicero, whatever it is. I was not aware of the scroll reading. Anyway, back to what I was talking about. So the market's, I think, a reflection of just the U.S. product being more in demand since there's very little product coming through the Strait of Hormuz. So there's stock exchanges all over the world. The American Stock Exchange is benefiting. Unnamed texter, what's pathetic is the state of Alabama will still tax you on your winnings when you drive to Mississippi, gamble, and are successful. If it's such a horrible thing, why would the state accept money off of it? Wouldn't that be considered dirty money? No, I mean, it's earnings. I don't know what the, it seems like you would earn it in another state. So if you earn it in Mississippi, wouldn't you pay Mississippi income tax? If you're earning it in Alabama, then you would pay income tax. And it's income. Your gambling winnings are income. I think it is pathetic that they do try to tax it, but I question the validity of that statement. If you're winning, your gambling winnings being taxed as income in the state of Alabama. 251-343-0106, time permitting. We'll get to more of your text. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Time permitting, text line 251-343-0106. Pat says, wait a second, y'all report your gambling winnings. Smiley emoji. Anyway, keep them coming and we'll get to those if possible. Joining us now, Eli is a candidate for United States Senate. We got to know him really well over this campaign cycle. We're grateful for his presence on our show this morning, but Jared Hudson is with us. Jared, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for making time for us. So, you still seem like you're in a pretty good shape here heading into Tuesday. How's the campaign going?
Man, it's going great, brother. I just got stuck in office because, you know, you got the little green button on the side. I'm sitting here pulling the door and the lady's yelling at me, hit the green button. So sorry about that. Man, the campaign's going great, brother. We're full tilt, blowing and going last few days. You know, May 19th, get out and send a word to Washington. Vote Jared Hudson for Senate. I'm going around telling everybody that.
Well, I've been talking about this a lot lately. There's still a lot of undecided voters up for grabs. And I don't know, maybe that's what you're seeing too, but the polling seems to suggest that. What do you need to do to get those guys to come your way?
Well, for us, is continue to talk to people and increase name ID. The voters have all seen the, you know, millions of dollars have been spent on one candidate. And most of them know about some of the others, but for us, it's just continue to go out there and meet voters. And we've got a high turnover rate. So that's what we got to do. Continue to share our message.
Well, let's talk about some of the news of the day. We'll start here. The big news in Alabama, obviously, is the redistricting episode. I know you're running for Senate, so it maybe doesn't directly impact you, but what are your thoughts on the way the fallout from the Louisiana decision and the way the state of Alabama went about handling it?
Well, so I'll say on the front end, you know, the turnout is always the big issue, right? Even without all this going on, a turnout and in a off-year GOP primary, right? So it's not, it's a primary where it's normally lower turnout. So that's always the biggest thing, making sure our voters still turn out. Now, hopefully, this decision doesn't wind up getting less voters to turn out because I believe is it August 11th when the special election will be for districts, was it 6, 7, 1, and 2? So, hopefully it doesn't mess with turnout on our end. But on the other side of it, I think the biggest question I have, and I understand from everything I've heard, because I haven't been involved in it necessarily, they decided to go with a bird in the hand as opposed to two in the bush. You know, instead of pushing for the 7-0 districts, they pushed for 6-1. You know, I would just say I kind of wish they would have pushed for 7-0 with what we've seen going on for at least my whole life with the way the Democrats redistrict things in states, you know, that are all blue. But, you know, at least we're going to be able to hopefully take a district back and make it more palatable for that area as opposed to having a CD1 that's Wiregrass all the way to Mobile. So I do think that that's positive. I just wish that they would have pushed a little bit harder on the 7-0.
Well, we had Coach on this morning. It sounds like we're going to get there ultimately if he's in charge. Let's start here. Trump and China, you're sort of have an expertise on some of this foreign policy. You're watching this. What do you make of it?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, you know, Trump goes over to China. I don't think we're going to see any, you know, major tariff relief or anything like that. I hope I'm wrong. I could be wrong. Maybe they make a deal. I think it's more of a flex, a little more of a strength thing. You know, I think that they've got to be careful. China has been at the, you know, 50-year game for a while. So they are really good at the long game. And we don't play on those sort of cycles. We run on an executive cycle. You know, every 4 years we get a new president. So that's something that we're going to have to be careful about because, again, they're willing to play the long game to ultimately try to become the world superpower because that's what we're fighting for. We're in an economic war with them right now. What's going on with the Straits and the IRGC and Iran? The benefit we have is it's hurting China. Their data centers, all the AI stuff, a lot of the oil that they would use to run those facilities. And then also, if you look at the land bridge that Iran is for China, they've had a lot of investment pull out of there. The Belt Road Initiative going through Iran that China was supporting. So there's a lot of things happen economic happening economically that's impacting China, maybe we can use those, maybe the president can use those as leverage tools to ease the burden on the American people, ultimately by, you know, hopefully in some positive way, partnering or making deals to where we have the, partner would be, I guess, the wrong word, but we have the upper hand and continue to show our strength on the world stage, especially with one of our major enemies like China. If anybody can do it, I think President Trump can do it. I mean, he's the, if there's a guy who can make a deal, what's that guy? So maybe he goes over there and makes us a good deal that helps the American people.
And then, I you know, the hope here is that maybe the Chinese have some leverage with the Iranians. We don't know.
That's the hope, right? Thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, and that's why I mentioned all of that with what they had going on in Iran. That is kind of the thought and the hope. I don't ease up. I don't think that it's going to be anything crazy other than maybe we can make a good deal that lets up on some of these issues we see going on with Iran. Because again, I mean, we're looking at, and President Trump mentioned it, and I think it'd be great. Let's pause the gas tax, right? So the federal gas tax, so that we can, I guess, kind of afford, it wouldn't be that much, was it 18.5 cents? But start being able to afford things a little bit more as we're starting to take the brunt of what this issue, this conflict in Iran is.
And, you know, while we're on this topic, sort of an update on Iran and the way that's going. You know, some days it sounds like from the administration we are going to achieve. And other days, it sounds like we're going to escalate what's going on. What do you make of it?
Brother, I can't make anything of it because every time I think something's going to happen, like, hey, wow, we might have a peace deal, then all of a sudden it's like it kind of unravels or the wheels fall off the bus. And at one point in time, it was our partners in Israel were smoking every dude that we $82 million a day, and then I heard somebody say $482 million a day. Whatever it is, it's costing them millions upon millions of dollars a day with what we have going on in the Strait. So hopefully we can hang on in this waiting game long enough to starve them out to where they have to come to the table and make a deal. I mean, I even heard water in their country is, you know, they're getting depleted on water, which is a problem, and they're going to have to come to the table soon. Hopefully we can wait long enough.
Well, culturally, I mean, there's an aspect of this that seems to be propping this up, that the economic pressure isn't really, I'm sure it's having some impact, but they're just hanging on. I mean, is it that? Do they feel that wedded to whatever Persian nationalism or maybe it's Islam? I mean, what is keeping that from crumbling under its own weight?
Well, so, I mean, think of it this way. I guess the best example I can give is, you know, we all remember 9/11 when the towers went down, and it really didn't matter where you were in America. It didn't matter, you know, who you were for or against. I mean, look at how our nation coalesced to go after, you know, the perceived enemies of the nation, whoever they were at the time and whoever they became, right? We were all kind of, everybody was American. Everybody was proud to be American. If you look, it's the same things happening in Iran, right? This is not Venezuela. The same thing's happening in Iran with the IRGC. You have the Persian people who feel as if they're under attack. And when you have a propaganda machine that is running a message that says, hey, this is the Americans. This is what they're doing to us. That definitely emboldens people to hold on to, in this case, their Persian heritage. With that also being said, Islam, definitely the Persians, they've been around for forever, right? Go all the way back in the Old Testament, the Bible. I mean, Daniel was in the Persian kingdom. So they've been around for thousands of years. They're good at, we're talking about China at the 50 and the 100-year game. This is a group of people who they're good at the 1,000-year game. So it's a little bit different than, you know, our American microwave mentality. And that's why I say, are we going to be able to play the waiting game in a way that brings us to an end? Because we can't let them win. We can't let China win. And we definitely don't want to put boots on the ground because it's not a, unless they're willing to blast everybody back to the Stone Ages, like we've heard them say, then we don't need to put boots on the ground.
Well, tell me, you know, how do you find the right balance here? You, while we're playing a long game, or they seem to be playing a long game, and we have to play, you know, some degree by their terms, how do we not do this mission creep, nation building, you know, more of the neocon strategy that I think is kind of rejected by a lot of your average Trump Republican voter?
Well, it's definitely rejected. I mean, it's rejected by warfighters like me who fought in every year of the dang GWAT since I joined the military. I mean, every time we went overseas, had buddies from the SEAL teams die. They didn't come home to their babies, didn't come home to their wife. And every time we deployed, we had to kill people. That then all of a sudden the Biden administration pulls out and says, oh, we're going to still send $40 million a week to them. I say all that to say, yeah, the neocon strategy of never ending war to keep us paid is bad. That's why I say if the politicians are willing to blast them off the face of the map and say we're killing every living thing there, that's the only time where it says, okay, maybe they would support boots on the ground. But if they're not willing to do that at the front end, they're not willing to support our warfighters who are going to go on the ground and risk their lives, and the families of our warfighters who are risking their men and women who would go in and do that. So I almost think that's a moot point, because we don't have the stomach, the financial ability, or the willingness to do that. So we have to look at what's going on now. We're continuing to strain Iran, continuing to block the straits, and try to get this thing in a way where we can make a deal, move away, impact China economically, and not risk the lives of our young men and women. Doesn't matter if you're for or against war, be for the warfighter. I mean, you've heard me say that before.
Well, what do you, you know, what is, and I know I've asked you this before, but what's a success look like? Because, you know, you listen to the Lindsey Grahams, it's just a wholesale new government that I don't know that is plausible. But, you know, is it just getting the Strait of Hormuz open? Have we taken away the threat sufficiently? What do you think that in the end should look like?
Man, that's the million-dollar question, and I think you've got a bunch of people arguing about it. I'll tell you this. Success looks like not listening to people like Lindsey Graham. I'll give you that much. But you know, I don't know necessarily what success would be. I mean, the administration has outlined what they think success is, and I think the ultimate piece is keeping the Iranians or the IRGC from having a nuclear weapon or having nuclear capabilities, and I think that that's what they're seeking to do.
But we feel like we've done extensive damage to the progress they've made over the decades. Is it, I mean, do we ever end it? Or do we only end it once you get a new regime in place? Because they're always going to be aspiring toward this objective, getting a nuclear weapon, a weapon of mass destruction, whatever you want to call it, and being able to have it in their arsenal. Is it, you know, or do we just do what we can and then come back, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years and do this all over again?
Look, we can't do that, because that's what happened in 1979, 1983, all through the 80s. And then you look in the late 90s, early 2000s, we lost 17 sailors at the USS Cole, you know, bombing. So, and then again, recently in 2023, buddies of mine, Chris Chambers, Nate Ingram, that gave their lives for this nation, taking down a Houthi ship. So we wouldn't have even had GWAT if this had been dealt with when it first, you know, rose its ugly head. It has to be dealt with. Otherwise, our kids are going to be dealing with an Iran that has a nuclear weapon that's able to touch anywhere in Europe and honestly possibly even be able to touch the rest of the world. So it has to be dealt with now. And I think the 60% enriched uranium is a problem. People will say it's not. No, that's a big problem. But how do you deal with that now? I think that's why Trump's going to China. And we'll know when we hear, hopefully we hear that some good progress has been made, because again, China's using Iran to wage an economic war, to wage a proxy war on the United States of America. So I don't want to get the cart in front of the horse. Let's wait and see what comes back when President Trump lets us know what's happened in China, what kind of deals are made.
And I know we've made this entire segment about Iran, but I just got one more question. I guess of anything, have we taken sort of the domination or the influence, let's say, that Iran has over the entire region? Because that to me, you know, they were meddling in other Gulf state politics. They have an influence there. If anything, maybe we have limited that to some degree.
You know what? I think we have. I think also one of the things, too, we showed a lot of our partners' true colors, whether it be NATO, whether it be the Arab states. Like, I mean, if you look at the Saudis, they buckled up shop and said, hey, we're not doing any production, you know, talking about all their, you know, oil facilities. We're not doing any production until 5 months after this thing is over. Everybody started showing their true colors, which is something that's very interesting for us to see and know, because we've been investing a lot in a lot of these places over the last few years. And then it also was able to give the administration time to go and say, hey, Israel, settle down for 1 minute. Stop killing everybody we're talking to. So I think all of our geopolitical partners in the region, we've been able to really probably bolster and make it even better, and maybe hurt, like you said, hurt some of the Persian partnerships with some of the Arab partners we have in the Gulf states.
Jared, we got to get out of here. Folks want to know more about your campaign, find you online or get in touch. How can they do so?
HudsonForAlabama.com. Like, share, and follow. Check us out. Follow us on social media. And let's get ready to send a warrior to Washington. Vote Jared Hudson on May 19th.
Well, Jared, best of luck to you on Tuesday, and maybe we'll hear from you again very soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, Jared Hudson, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
He said some things just glitter and shine. Taught us that love was the one thing money couldn't buy, that it never was.
Cause you see, I'm a dinosaur. I should have died.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Coming up shortly, midday Mobile. Sean Sullivan will be with you, so stay tuned for that. Tomorrow on this show, you'll get Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, his last appearance before the election. Scott Stadhagen, he is the new Alabama Republican Party chairman. He'll be making his, I guess, might be his first, or maybe it's his second appearance as officially as the chairman tomorrow on the program. And then we'll wrap it up with, or we'll probably have a couple other guests. It's just election time, and I'm going to try to squeeze in as many as possible between now and Tuesday. But otherwise, we'll have April Marie Fogle, my colleague at 1819 News, joining us. Unnamed texter listened to Barry Moore earlier. Jared Hudson now is clear that Barry Moore is a better depth of policy understanding and connections with the Trump team. I hope Hudson will run for lower office sometime after the primary, so he could gain some unique understanding. He seems like a nice guy. Moore gets a my vote. She said, well, there, I'll say this, and I'm not, you know, really trying to put my thumb on the scale for either one of these candidates. They're just all, they're all qualified in their own way. And you see where we steered the discussion when we talked to these guys. I think if you're a foreign policy, you think that's a priority, and you hear that he's a grasp of that, especially when it comes to the Middle East. With Barry Moore, there's sort of just the way Washington works, maybe some of the internal state politics. They're all like, and then Steve Marshall, who is a, you know, has the expertise with the legal side of the equation, the constitutionality, having served as AG, has his own set of qualifications. So I think, you know, all of these guys have their own fortes and are smart in their own way. Mike writes, Iran has definitely attacked and killed Americans, and it is bad, a bad actor. But how many people do you think know that Israel killed 35 Americans and another 170 plus on the USS Liberty when they knowingly attacked an American warship? And then finally, Scrollverine. Success in Iran, at least be the Iran, is so intimidated, beaten down, and afraid of reprisal that they dare not attack anyone. Unfortunately, that won't happen as they see an American divided government with lots of sympathizers. And there you have it. We'll leave it at that. I have to get out of here. I will try to do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.